I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Armed with a warrant, the FBI raided the home of Paul Manafort, former Trump campaign manager, early in the morning on July 26th. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has been looking into possible collusion between Trump's presidential campaign and Russia. Manafort had done consulting work for a pro-Kremlin Ukrainian political party before joining the team and had worked as a political consultant advising foreign leaders, many of them dictators. President Trump was asked yesterday whether he thought the raid was appropriate.
I thought it was a very, very strong signal or whatever. I know Mr. Manafort, haven't spoken to him in a long time, but I know him. He was with the campaign, as you know, for a very short period of time, relatively short period of time, but I've always known him to be a good man. I thought it was a very, they do that very seldom. So I was surprised to see it. I was very, very surprised to see it. We haven't really been involved. Excuse me?
Have you spoken to the FBI director about it?
No, I have not. I have not. But to do that early in the morning, whether or not it was appropriate, you'd have to ask them. I've always found Paul Manafort to be a very decent man. And he's like a lot of other people, probably makes consultant fees from all over the place. Who knows? I don't know. But I thought that was a very, that was pretty tough stuff.
Mr. President,
to wake him up, perhaps his family was there, I think that's pretty tough stuff.
We asked Winnie O'Kelly to join us. She is executive editor at Bloomberg. And Winnie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. In a time of daily leaks, I am so surprised that we learned just this week about this raid on July 26, almost 2 weeks to learn about it. This was obviously took place in a rather public setting. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't know that this goes down to a leak exactly. Clearly someone was aware of it, and it took a little while for it to drift into the mainstream and to be stood up, as we like to say, in journalistic worlds and confirmed that it definitely had happened. But Paul Manafort clearly has been providing some information to Congress. Clearly there was an appetite from the Mueller team to have more, and they had reason to believe that maybe they weren't getting it all, and they took a rather extreme action here.
This was the same day that he was scheduled to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Do you think there's any coincidence there?
I'm not going to really quite go speculating on that too much. What I can say for certain is that Mueller's team is really gathering a broad array of information about Paul Manafort that includes his action on the Trump campaign, as well as his activities in his private life, business life, long before he joined the Trump effort.
Do we know what the FBI was looking for?
No, we don't. We do know that he has provided congressional investigators, Paul Manafort has, with documents, he says 300 documents, related to the campaign work. When Manafort was dismissed from the Trump campaign, and it was a fairly brief tenure running it, he lost all access to campaign materials. That means his email accounts, his calendars, his schedules. So he doesn't have that any longer. But I would point out that everything we have now obtained in our reporting shows that there were investigations of Paul Manafort's activities long before Mueller was appointed special counsel. And he has quite a lot of interactions in his past that are probably going to come under extraordinary scrutiny. That includes monies he earned abroad. There are probably going to be questions about what taxes he paid on that. What was the purposes of that? Where did it all come from? Did he disclose properly when he was and was not working for foreign entities? So all of that is being swept up into this broader effort to determine whether Russia colluded with anyone in the U.S.
In fact, you are reporting that, or have reported that, federal prosecutors in Manhattan were looking into a number of real estate deals, I guess looking into whether there was some money laundering or not. Is there anything more you can tell us about that, Winnie?
Well, they're really curious. There's some unusual deals here. He's bought a lot of real estate alone and with others over the years, often with cash, and then taken loans out from them. And in recent times, and I'll be a little vague about how I say that, but over the last year or so, there are indications that he probably was coming under some financial pressure And so maybe was trying to take out what we would call equity, just like a homeowner would take out a home equity loan. Or take out some of the equity out of those real estate ventures in order to spend it for other purposes. But the curiosity about that we've previously reported on, and I find very interesting, is he got a couple of loans that were very large in an unusual fashion. Two of them from small federal savings or small banking institutions. One was called the Federal Savings Bank and another out of Rhode Island and Connecticut. And those were institutions that had connections to others in the Trump world. So it looks like someone was trying to help him. He also had a personal loan from Tom Barrack at one point.
And who's Tom Barrack?
Okay, he's another important figure in the Trump world.
Go ahead. It gets complicated, but no, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, so I won't go into all of them necessarily here, but definitely there are three or four people in Trump's inner circle, people who have been helpful to him. Barrack is an investor who has a good deal of money, has known Manafort for some time, clearly, and at various points has given him additional funding. He said just a personal loan, and that was long before Manafort joined the campaign. So there's just unusual, not many of us get a personal loan from somebody when we want to buy a house.
Now, Mueller's team has been, or I should say Robert Mueller has been building up his team, and some of the people that he's been hiring more recently are these prosecutors who have expertise in the financial world. You were talking about the federal prosecutors, prosecutors in Manhattan. What should we make of that?
Well, I think that goes to the breadth of Mueller's effort. While he ultimately wants to find out who was colluding with Russia, the ways one finds that out, and his mandate is to go wherever it leads, is to put pressure on people who may have other problems in their past and then might be forced to become more forthcoming. So we're just talking about the tried and true element here of putting pressure on people who might then become more cooperative witnesses. And I can't say for certain that that's what they're trying to do with Manafort, but it certainly bears all of those earmarks of it. So if, for example, and again, I'm not accusing Paul Manafort of anything here, but if, for example, he has not declared all of his income properly, in other words, he's evaded taxes in some fashion, or he's engaged in some deals that maybe delved into fraud because of others' actions or his own. You know, those are things where prosecutors and investigators could go to him and say, look, we've got you on this. And he might say, but wait a minute, or through his lawyers, wait a minute, perhaps I could share some information that would be more important to you. And so that tends to be how this system works. And I think it's the reason right now so many eyes are on Paul Manafort is because he has so many interesting other business transactions in his past. That he could be vulnerable to that kind of pressure.
And I read yesterday that he has hired some new lawyers to represent him, people with expertise in the world of finance.
Yeah, you know, this is curious to us. The new firm, Miller & Chevalier, is a good firm. He also had a good representation before this. So there's a lot of speculation about why it might be. I'm going to say up front, I don't know, but I will talk about some of the possibilities here. One thing we pointed out in our article is that he is under some financial pressure. The kind of legal fronts he is facing now is really expensive. So the fact that now bank subpoenas have gone to all of his on his accounts and transactions, it's going to make it harder for him to get access to money. So that's going to be one thing. Another issue here might be that you hire a lawyer when you're trying to make something go away, shall we say, to try to work out a deal or to try to say, look, this is all fine and good, maybe to come up to compliance on things he should have filed earlier about his work for foreign governments, which he's now been doing. If you think things are escalating to another level, you might want a different kind of representation. And so there's some talk about that now, that you know things may be heating up to a point that he needs a different level of representation.
Now, he did withhold information about income, a late filing with the Foreign Agent Registration Act, or FARA. How serious is that he was late to file that?
You know, I'm going to say something really, I think it's pretty minor.
Okay.
In the scheme
Fair
of
enough.
Things, it's pretty minor. And many of the others, you know, the idea is you're supposed to be disclosing what you're doing. We've seen amended forms by others, including Michael Flynn now. But the bigger question, I think, is, you know, what other issues might he have? And if I were his lawyer, which I'm not, I might say, you know, even someone who's done their best, you know, if you dig pretty hard in someone's past who's done a lot of business, can you find something wrong? Probably. So maybe what you want to do is not have prosecutors digging into everything he's ever done. Is there some way to avoid that? Is there some way to try to create a bit of a firewall between his work for Trump and the campaign and the rest of his business life and personal life? And that's becoming very hard to do here. And I think his first attempts to do that have not been entirely successful, and that's becoming painful.
His people say he has been cooperating. Obviously, if there was a warrant issued, it seems to indicate, at least from Mueller's perspective, he has not been cooperating, or they don't have all the evidence or materials that they need. Do we know just how cooperative he has been?
Well, we know a little bit. And I would use that word in an interesting fashion. He has been cooperating with the congressional inquiries. Uh-huh. So he's certainly handed over documents and information he had about the campaign. And again, one of the things he did was explain to those lawmakers about this meeting that erupted last month involving the Russian lawyer and Don Jr. and Jared Kushner and himself a year ago. And he was forthcoming about that as far as I know, but he certainly, you know, brought that information forward. That is campaign information that he has divulged. On other matters that might go into his background, for example, he worked for foreign governments and for oligarchs involved in both Russia and Ukraine. Has he been forthcoming on that to Mueller's team? I don't know the answer to that. I suspect that they are looking very hard into his personal life. So when he's cooperating with authorities, I think when they're asking for things by subpoena, he's providing them, of course. Is he volunteering information from his personal business life? I would not be so certain about that.
Does this in any way implicate the president or candidate Donald Trump from what we know so far?
You know, I guess I always want to go back to what we know and whatever we suspect. We don't really have any evidence right now that the Trump campaign or that Paul Manafort was colluding with the Russians in any way around the election. That is something that is being investigated. That has not come to light. These kinds of investigations can take a long time, and they tend to start with the low-hanging fruit. So again, because Paul Manafort had worked for oligarchs, he had some personal connections, and that's where some of this is beginning. So no, we don't have any other information yet. What many people suspect, and only time will tell, is that some of the people who have since left the Trump orbit, including Paul Manafort, including Michael Flynn, who was briefly the National Security Advisor, that they're going to come under additional pressure from prosecutors and that they might then provide additional information, one of them or another or others. And I think that is where most of the intense scrutiny, both privately and publicly, rests right now.
Well, Winnie O'Kelly, I appreciate you getting us up to speed on this complicated case. Thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, my pleasure.
And she's the executive editor at Bloomberg. And again, talking about the FBI raid on the home of President Trump's former campaign advisor, Paul Manafort. We take a very short break, but do stay with us. We are shifting gears. Boy, are we shifting gears after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, from Paul Manafort to Philadelphia-based DJ, musician, and producer King Britt, and his longtime musical partner and collaborator, guitarist Tim Motzer. They've collaborated on a number of projects, including Britt's new release called After from his avant-garde Floston Paradigm project. He creates hypnotic and mysterious soundscapes, mixing the human voice with electronics. Tim Motzer is a Philadelphia-based guitarist, a prolific composer, much-in-demand collaborator, and improviser, and they join us on Radio Times to talk about how they work together, their approach to music, and the pleasures of breaking musical conventions. King Britt, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
And Tim Motzer, thank you for joining us as well.
It's great to be here,
Marty.
It's
been about 10 years since the two of them have been together with us on Radio Times. Let me open up the lines, and it's 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I do want to play a couple of selections from this, do I call it an album?
Yes, album.
After, but I'm curious what you were going for, King Britt.
Going into it, I really didn't know what I was going for.
Really?
So I approached doing the record in a more improvised way, just alone in the studio, but set up everything so that I was pretending like I was playing live for the backbone of the sound of the record. And what came out of it was working with the two new Moog Mother 32s, their synthesizers.
And this is your studio, we should say to our listeners, exactly. Filled with electronics, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So Moog, the synth manufacturer out of Asheville, they created this new kind of semi-modular synth. I don't want to get too nerdy, but that
hey,
was the...
You're on NPR.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Nerd radio.
But that's the backbone of the album. I started to play around with polyrhythms. And with that, I was like, I want to do an album with no drums.
With no drums?
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's no drums on the album, but there's plenty of rhythm. So a lot of people didn't even really say to me, yo, there's no drums on it. They just said it was great. And they felt they resonated with where I was going. So it's you feel like you're flying.
No drums, but we hear voices. No words.
Exactly.
From what I can hear.
Right.
But no words, but we hear voices.
Exactly. Using the human voice more as an instrument, and you can kind of put your own words in replace of those.
Ah.
So it's like when, remember the Cocteau Twins back in the day in the 80s, and she made up her own language. I didn't know what she was saying, but it didn't matter because it was so beautiful.
Oh. Well, let me play. This is Life, and this is from King Britt's new album called After, and it's featuring Pia Urkola.
Urkola. Yes, yes.
So you will hear her voice.
Yes.
This is just a little piece.
Pia was on the first album, the first Floating Paradigm album, and I was very influenced by the scene with the opera singer in The Fifth Element. And that's where the name Floating Paradigm comes from. They said Floating Paradise in the film,
yes.
Which was the place where Corbin needed to get to get the plans or whatever. And I said it by accident. Paradigm, and my friend at the time was like, oh, you should keep that.
Flotsam Paradigm.
Exactly. So I kept that. But there was a scene in a movie with the opera singer, and Pia went to Juilliard, studied opera. She didn't finish because she wanted to get more into electronic music, but you know, I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Like, and she's in Philly, and we did one track, and that was it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, and what did you hear in that, Tim? And you made a funny little gesture at King while we were listening.
Yes,
to that.
I was listening to his pulse synthesizer going through the stereo field left to right.
Okay.
You know,
panning,
nerd stuff,
nerding out,
nerding out. Exactly. Well, we in our Billboard we played something from this album After, Tim, that you composed and performed.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I mean we've already heard it, but it's what was your interest in part of this collaboration?
I mean, you know, King and I go back so far now. And when we get together in the studio, it's just so much fun. And that's what it's about. And it's about creativity. And we just get in and he plays tracks and I plug in and we have all the devices going and we just go. We improvise. And it's just a joy to do it. That's what it's about, I think.
And just improvise is that sort of yes and stuff, right? You just, you're playing.
Yeah. And you were playing off each other. Like he'll play something more. This song, it was more, I had the kind of.
Like a sequence.
Yeah. The bed going, the pulse. And then he pretty much improvised over it. Mm-hmm. But simultaneously, we're creating new sounds while he's doing it through effects.
Wow.
So kind of like Lee Scratch Perry or Matt Professor in the, you know, the dub reggae world, where they're taking the tracks and they're, you know, processing them live. So that's part of composition now too.
Right. In the fact of this track or all your tracks, like when we were cutting, King was working, you know, running his sequencers, the playback, but still manipulating the filters and, you know, all of this stuff. So it changes everything, how I'm responding to it as well. So it's really fun.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Let me play another clip, and this is All. And this is from this new album, After, and it features Philadelphia-based artist Moore Mother.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's give it a listen, and then we'll talk. And that's all from a King Britt's new album, After. And while we were listening, I said, this is making me crazy.
Yes,
and you said, good.
That's the whole idea. Well, it was great to collaborate with Moore Mother, who has been a friend for quite some time now, and who's an amazing, amazing, amazing artist and activist in Philly. And now she's traveling the world and finally gotten her accolades and her due.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got together, I said, just bring a synth in and we'll just figure something out.
And that was the two of you?
Yes.
What we're hearing there?
Yes. And she came in, she had this little synth that was, you could fit in your pocket.
Really?
By this company called Castle. She plugged in and we just went for it. All live.
And that's what we're hearing.
Yeah. And she always brings the grit. You know, she brought the grit. And you could just feel like she was going through something, I was going through something, and we just released it in the track.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's King Britt, who joins us along with Tim Motzer. King is a Philadelphia-based DJ, musician, producer, composer. Tim is a guitarist. He's also a composer, collaborator, improviser. We are talking about King Britt's new album, new release called After, and that's from his Floston Paradigm
Yes.
project.
Yes.
And we're going to play some more clips as well, or more music as well, and you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Tim, how would you describe this music scene that you and King are a part of here in Philadelphia?
Interesting. It's been an ongoing world, I think, for a long, long time. You know, this kind of electronic scene, if you will. Right. It's been very underground forever. And having toured around the planet a lot, you know, places like Norway and stuff like that, you start seeing and plugging into all these different scenes. And I think part of that, for me anyway, is like you bring that back home with you. You know, like, wow, you're inspired. Like at the Punk Festival in Norway was amazing, or anywhere in England. And over the years, you know, you just pick up on this stuff and it kind of all merges together. And we have a Philly slant on it here.
Well, I was going to ask, because we think the Philadelphia Orchestra has this Philadelphia sound. I think there's a kind of soul music sound that came out of Philly as well.
Yes.
King, is there
a kind of electronics sound you think that we associate with Philadelphia, with the region?
Yes, because, you know, back when we were starting kind of the kind of house and a dance scene in the late 80s, early 90s, we were bringing, and I was a buyer for Tower Records.
Yes, you were.
So Josh Wink, myself, Dazia, like Bobby Startup, Ricky Lee, like all of us were bringing this music from all over the world to Philly. And we were bringing the artists, everyone from 808 State to a guy called Gerald to Flying Lotus and Shabazz Palaces of recent times. So we've always been cultural. We've done cultural exchanges with the world through Philadelphia. Yeah. Now, our Philly electronic sound, because of our upbringing and because of radio here, WDAS, and, you know, growing up with the best of Gamelin Huff and how they mixed orchestration with soul music, we find that we do that. It's in our DNA. We just do it naturally in our electronic music. So you might listen to this record, but you're going to hear a lot of soul in this record, even though it's electronic.
True.
Rhythmically and emotionally. And the intention of, it's just in us. That's, it's in the water.
Well, let me, and we know all about Philadelphia water. Let me play another piece, and this is called Touch, and from the new album After, and it features the vocals of Alexa Barshini.
Yes, yes.
All right, let's give it a listen. Voices and
yes,
whatever, all these sounds that we're hearing
right
there.
Well, one good thing about Philadelphia is we always have mix scenes. Okay, so there are certain hubs in the city that were hubs for the scene. And Milk Crate, which is the record store cafe, right, is kind of a hub for that. So I used to go to Milk Crate every morning, get my croissant sandwich and and orange juice, and Alexa was working there.
Oh, wow.
So we started talking, whatever, and, you know, she's like, oh, I sing, and I'm like, really? So I always kept that in my mind, and I checked her out. Her voice, beautiful, but it had to be the right project. And when I did this track, it was very kind of Brazilian vibes. I'm like, her voice would be perfect. But she had moved to Brooklyn. And so she came down for the day, boom.
And there, yeah. And we heard the results.
Yeah, more to come.
And more to come. Tim, I'm curious, you're a guitar player, guitarist.
I am.
Have you always played guitar?
I've always played guitar. I've been playing for about 40 years now.
How young were you when you picked up a guitar?
I can't tell you. Oh, no, 11 years old.
Okay, just did the math. Okay,
yes.
Fair enough. But 11, and did someone give you a guitar and say, or did you say, I want to play
that? Well, I have two older sisters, and they both played guitar a little bit. And I had a dream, actually. I woke up, and I was like, in the dream, it said, you should learn to play guitar, seriously.
Really?
And that day, I called my sister on the phone. I said, can I borrow your guitar? I want to learn how. She goes, sure, and I have a Beatles book, and you can learn tunes out of that. And I'm like, great. And I don't think I gave that guitar back to her for a long, long time.
So you're self-taught, basically?
Yes. But, you know, at this point, you know, going through, you pick up a lot and learn with a lot of people. So.
And, King, I read that when you were young...
I didn't know that story, by the way.
You didn't? Oh,
that's
okay.
That's amazing.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I read that when you were little, you played violin?
Oh, I did. I took a year of violin, but I really don't remember any of it. But I have, my mom has plenty of photos of me with the violin.
Proof.
But no, I took it, but I didn't, I don't know. I just couldn't grasp. I didn't have the attention span to grasp the notes and all, the whole thing.
That's a hard instrument.
It is.
But records, I was all there. I would spend hours and hours and hours just listening to records and pieces of records and collecting records. Oh. My parents collected records, so I came in through the back door. You know, I came into music that way.
What music did you listen to as a kid then?
Oh, yeah. So my parents, my dad was funk and soul and jazz. My mom was jazz and vocals. So when I did the Silk 130 project, that was my ode to my parents and my upbringing and listening to DAS and listening to WHAT and just all these stations back in the day playing all the soul and in Motown and yeah.
All that good stuff. And yes. Tim, what kind of music did you listen to as a kid?
Well, you know, like I was saying, my older sisters, the Beatles were huge in the house. And my mom was actually a big band singer.
Was she?
Yeah. So when I was growing up, I had lots of jazz in the house. There was a piano and she played. And you know, so a lot of jazz, you know, Duke Ellington, she loved Ella Fitzgerald, things like that. So it was a mixture of jazz and all the late 60s stuff, early 70s stuff. Jimi Hendrix was huge for me, you know. Spent a lot of time listening to all those records.
Those are
still,
good records.
Still do, actually.
That's Tim Motzer. He's a Philadelphia-based guitarist, a composer, collaborator, improviser. Also with us is King Britt. He's a Philadelphia-based DJ, musician, producer, improviser, collaborator, composer. And we are playing some selections from King Britt's new album from the Flotsam Paradigm Project called After. We're going to play some more music and previous collaborations between our two guests. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with King Britt and Tim Motzer about music, the music that they create. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Tim, I'd love to have you set up a piece. This is called Solo One.
Yes.
From an album of yours. What do you want to say before we give a quick list?
Well, it's from a collaborative album with touch guitarist and electronic artist Markus Reuter and myself. He's from Berlin, Germany, and great friends. We've been working together for a long time and have multiple albums out. But this was just released this last month, and it's from a concert from 2013 that was from a film studio, and we did actually a filming there of this. And this recording is from that. And Solo One is my first solo from this record. Markus also does solos. And then we do a whole bunch of duos. And it's all soundscape. It's all improvised. So.
Perfect setup, Solo One. What exactly were we listening to there, Tim?
Who knows what that was? Well, that's my guitar, basically, with, you know, it's prepared guitar, some things, little clips on the strings that make it sound different, like gamelan or African harp or something like that.
It just, kind of drone-y type
sound? There's also drones going on and backwards loops running of, you know, processed guitar and things like that. So, yes.
Yes.
That's what's happening, kind of.
How do you prepare for a concert like that?
Well, I play a lot. And, you know, part of what I do is I work with contemporary dancers. So that's a big part of my day-to-day. So the guitar is always in my hand. And because of working with dance, I have to always be prepared to be able to create in the moment and give them a score, basically. So that has really helped the language of my guitar to get to this new area, or this evolution that I'm working on all the time. You know,
so you have to be really watchful, right?
Yes.
While you're performing that.
Totally. It's like doing a live film score in a way, except it's live humans. It's dance. It's in the moment for sure.
Let me get, looks like Chet from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Chet, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
I'm listening, and I'm going to try to avoid asking any nerdy questions. Cause I'm on the
station. No, bring it on, please.
With a recording studio and whatnot. But to try to raise something more succinct, there's quite a bit, as you guys, I'm sure, know, going on in Philly right now with indie rock and pop kind of stuff. It's like quite a resurgence. Mm-hmm. And being a bit of a musician and a producer of some other artists in the town, I thought it would be pretty fascinating to throw around the potential of you guys maybe even doing some kind of collaborative thing. I just think the two worlds could potentially, if nothing else, even do a couple of 7-inches or something very interesting. So just kind of curious about any willingness or openness to that kind of thing.
Oh, man. Always
this
open.
This is King Britt. Go ahead.
Always open. Thank you for calling and suggesting this, because, you know, back in the day, collaboration between the genres was, or between the scenes was a lot heavier. Like, everybody was collaborating. But because the city has changed drastically, you know, I grew up here, and just to watch the gentrification and just it's becoming very homogenized, and we're losing a lot of great artists to LA and to New York because I don't know that it's just becoming very kind of sterile. So for you to call and, you know, suggest this is fantastic, because everyone's in their kind of their own bubble, and
it's true.
And no one's really reaching out to collab. I mean, we do as much as we can, but it's great to hear. So thank you, and we'll get your info after.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll put you on hold and get info and try to get you hooked up. I mean, it is interesting to think about these genres because you sort of break all that stuff down.
Yeah,
I mean, even as I was writing my intro for today's show, I was like, what words do I use? How do I describe these two guys?
Right.
Because things don't exactly fit the way they used to. And that's I think it's a good thing.
Right, it is good. But also, like, the with social media, like, everything is just so boxed in.
Right.
You know, like, we used to go out all the time, and just, there were scenes, there was revival, and you had everyone converging. You had the indie rock kids, you had the punkers, you had the hipsters, you had the electronic artists in one place.
Days.
Now everyone's on their phone, right?
That's right.
Yes.
As I see the two phones in front of you,
right.
I'm
Mine's
just going to say.
Mine's off. Currently.
Did you grow up in Philadelphia, Tim?
No, I'm actually from Hamilton, Ohio.
Oh, really?
And I escaped Ohio, you know, after college and came to Philly. And I've been here for a long time now, so I feel like I'm from here.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like you're adopted. What brought you to Philly, though?
Well, after I graduated, I saw no hope to do creative music in Ohio at all, and actually had the luck of a friend who was an attorney here. He said, why don't you come here and sleep on my floor and help me manage bands? And I said, I'll do that. And that was my way in, and wow, Never looked back.
Wow. I'm going to take us all back to 1998, King Britt. This is when the funk hits the fan.
Oh, yeah.
From Silk 130.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about Silk 130, and then we'll play a little bit of this song.
Well, it's a beautiful segue, because Silk 130 is a collaboration of all the artists that used to come to Silk City. Silk City was the hub for, it was the hotbed of what was going on in the early 90s into the mid-2000s. And I used to, DJ Dazia and myself used to do Back to Basics. And we would hear these voices, you know, Tanja Dixon and Alma Horton, they would come and just sing without a mic or anything, and you could hear it over the records. And we were like, who are these girls? And we met them, and I just, Tim was there, and then we started to, a Monday night where we brought the band, we put a band together, and the band would play over the records. So then I was like, okay, we need to do our actual album. And so everyone that used to come to Silk is on this record, and we did the record. So Silk 130 was born.
So how many musicians are we hearing here?
On this track, it's probably like 11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But for the overall album, in and out of songs, it's maybe 20 different musicians.
Wow.
And I did this record co-produced by John Wicks, who Judy Wicks's brother. Yeah, Judy Wicks from The White Dog.
Right. This is that very Philly thing.
They used to come to Silk all the time. And John had Third Story Studios, and I had never worked in a bigger studio like that. And yeah, he really helped put it together.
Well, let's listen.
So props to John Wicks.
When the Funk Hits the Fan.
Yeah.
Going down, girl.
Come on, tell me. I heard it was about this funk thing. You know,
it's a funk thing.
It's a funk thing.
Oh, let's tell them what's going down.
What's going down, down, down? What's going down, down, down? When the funk hits the fan, you're bound to understand what's going down.
What's going down?
When the funk hits the fan, you're bound to understand what's going down. What's going down, down, down? When the funk hits the fan, you're bound to understand what's going down.
When the funk hits the fan, from King Britt Presents Silk 130. This goes back to 1998, almost 20 years ago. Very nostalgic to hear that kind of music, don't you think?
Yeah, it was great. And we just did a reunion at TLA, sold out show. It was beautiful with all the collaborators from that record and their kids.
Wow.
So like, that was amazing.
Ursula Rucker's son. Ursula was
a poet and
was pregnant with her son at the first show at TLA in 98, and he performed with us this time.
It's amazing.
It's kind of surreal.
So how did you two hook up?
Tim and I?
Yeah.
Silk City.
Was it Silk City? Okay. Full circle.
Yep, that's it.
It
did
all
you just
started
walk
there.
In the door there and he was DJing?
For me, the day it started, I ran into Jafar Baron, who's a trumpet player, and at back in the day, the old Ortliebs, which was a jazz hub, of course, and went in there and saw Jafar, and I was like, hey, we should jam sometime or play. He goes, come to Silk City tonight. I'm starting a thing. So I went, sat in with Jafar, and I was in the band immediately. That was it.
Wow.
And it was just that party was the center for so long.
And Tim is such a badass, and he's just in the groove. Like, he just fell right in, like he was from Philly, you know?
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Let me play, and this is actually the last time you two were on together, 2005. This is King Britt Presents Sister Gertrude Morgan. She was a street singer, preacher in New Orleans.
Yes.
Well known there, and I guess recorded.
Right. So with Preservation Hall, you know, she was also the babysitter of Ben Jaffe, who now runs Preservation Hall. And Alan, who his dad, who started Preservation Hall, was like, yo, you know, we need to record you, because she would sing with tambourine, and she thought she was the bride of Christ. And
yes,
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so she did the record in 1970. And later on, Andy Horowitz from Rope-A-Dope at the time was in New Orleans, and he heard it, and he called me. He's like, you have to redo this record. And the rest is history. Yeah.
Let's give it a listen. New World in My View.
I got a new world in my view. Lord, my journey I pursue. I said I'm running for the city. I got the new world in my view. I got the new world. world in my view. Oh, my joy and I pursue. Lord, I'm running, running for the city. I got the new world in my view. Come on, get an army. Help me to run this holy righteous way. Can't you hear them? Savior call. Well, he's knocking at your door today. I've got that new world in my view. Lord, my journey I pursue. I said I'm running, running for the city. I got the new world in my view. He bowed record, or he suffered for Jesus Christ. They placed him on an island called Patmos. He had a great revelation sign. I got the new world in my view. Lord, my journey I pursue. I said I'm running for the city. I got the new world.
Oh, I really love that. It just gives me chills. And what you did was you provided a sort of backdrop of orchestration to
exactly.
her, to her
so
voice.
We treated it like as if she was in the studio with us, and we really channeled some heavy things on that record. And every time I hear it, we just performed it in New Orleans a few months ago.
Wow.
Because we just did the re-release of the double vinyl that we limited edition that we
I
gave
know.
You.
Thank you very much.
If you still have a turntable.
I do.
Oh, good.
I do.
Good.
I do.
Awesome.
I do.
And there were some new Sister G tapes found recently.
Sister Gertrude, really?
Yes. So they're transferring them now. So we're going to listen and wow. maybe there'll be a part two.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was used, I mean, that album has been used in some movie projects what, TV shows? And
yeah, so True Blood, Miami Vice, and then this gentleman in New Zealand sampled it. His name's David Dallas, and it just catapulted. Like he did a hip hop thing and he rapped over it. So it was on the NFL, like
it blew up.
It was like in all the sports commercials and shows, and then a Guinness commercial.
Really?
Guinness.
Were you comfortable with that?
At first, we wanted to see the commercial first. And yeah, it was cool. It was like the making of it and the background of the family. We all agreed, but we're very careful with Sister G's,
absolutely,
how it's presented. Because the first version of this guy who sampled it, it wasn't too good. And we were like, this is religious material. This is sacred stuff. So he redid it, and he did a great job. He did a good job. So this has gone through many incarnations.
We're going to end on that note.
There you go.
There you go. King Britt, thank you so much for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you so much, Marty.
You're very welcome. And Tim Motzer, thank you for coming in as well.
Such a pleasure.
A pleasure for us as well. And again, we were talking about King Britt's new release. It's called After from the Flosston Paradigm Project. I said that correctly. And both of our guests are composers and improvisers. And in fact, here's another piece from this new album, All's Said and Done, from the new album After. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, help from Al Banks. Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri produce Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us.